man studied the card. He placed his finger on the blade rammed through the victim's back. And that sword looks a little like you. He glanced at Mora. It was a glance. She glanced back. It was also a glance.
Well, said Calla.
Would you do the honor, Mr. Gray? Mora handed him the deck of cards. You'll have to ask top or bottom. Mr. Gray gravely accepted the responsibility. He asked Calla, top or bottom?
Three of cups and top, of course, Calla said, her smile plumb and wicked. The only place to be.
Mr. Gray removed the card from the top and turned it over. Of course it was the three of cups. Mora grinned. She said, Empress, bottom. The gray man removed the card from the bottom and showed it to the room. The Empress's gown was suggested with a liberal swipe of charcoal, and her crown was studded with inky fruits or jewels. The gray man clapped, slowly.
Four of wands, bottom, Calla said.
Ten of coins, top, Mora shot back.
Ace of cups, bottom,
Calla fired out. Mora slapped the arm of the sofa. The sun, bottom.
Four of swords, top, Calla returned, her mouth a deadly curl of purple.
The gray man flipped the cards again and again, revealing the correct predictions. Persephone's quiet voice cut through Mora's and Calla's increasingly loud competition.
The king of swords.
Everyone turned to look at Persephone, who sat with her knees together and her hands folded neatly in her lap. Occasionally, Persephone appeared both 8 years old and 80 at once. Now was one of those times. The gray man's hand hovered obediently over the deck. Top or bottom? Persephone blinked.
16 cards from the top, I believe.
Mora and Calla both raised an eyebrow. Calla's went up farther. The gray man carefully counted the cards, double-checked his count, and then turned over the 16th card for the others to see. The king of swords, master of his own emotions, master of his own intellect, master of reason, gazed out at them, expression inscrutable.
That's Mr. Gray's card,
Persephone said. Mora asked,
are you sure?
At a wordless agreement from Persephone, Mora turned to the gray man.
Do you think that's your card?
The gray man turned the card one way and another as if it would reveal its secrets to him.
I don't know much about tarot. Is it a terrible card?
No card is a terrible card, Mora said. She eyed the gray man, fitting the king of swords into the man before her. And the interpretation can be very different at each reading. But the king of swords is a powerful card. He's strong, but impartial, cold. He is very, very good about making decisions based upon facts instead of emotion. No, it's not a terrible card, but I'm picking up something else off it. Something like
violence, Calla finished.
It was a word that had an immediate effect on everyone in the room. For Mora, Persephone, and Calla, memories of Mora's half-sister came in first as they were the most recent, followed by the boy Gansey and his broken thumb. The gray man recalled Declan Lynch's swimming gaze, blood streaming from his nose. Violence.
Yes, violence, Mora said. Is that what you meant, Persephone?
Yes. All three of them had leaned unconsciously toward one another. Sometimes Mora, Persephone, and Calla seemed more like three parts of the same entity instead of three separate women. The three of them turned as one to Mr. Gray. He admitted, "My work is sometimes violent." I thought you said you were researching a novel. Mora's tone was more than a little prickly.
That was a lie, the gray man said. I'm sorry. I had to think quickly when you said I couldn't have a reading.
So what's the truth?
I'm a hitman.
This confession ushered in several moments of silence. The gray man's answer seemed very flippant, but his voice suggested otherwise. It was the sort of answer that required an immediate clarification or qualification, but he offered nothing. Mora said, "That's not very funny."
"No, it's not," the gray man agreed.
Everyone in the room was waiting for Mora's response. She asked, "And does work bring you here tonight?"
"Just research,"
For work? Unperturbed, Mr. Gray said. Everything is research for work, in its way. He did absolutely nothing to make his words easier to accept. It was impossible to tell if he was asking them to believe him, or to humor him, or to fear him. He merely laid out this confession and waited. Finally, Mora said, "Might be nice to have someone deadlier than Kala in the room for a change." She glanced at him. He glanced back. There was a wordless, tacit agreement in it. They all had another drink. The gray man asked knowledgeable questions full of wry humor. Sometime later, he stood, took everyone's empty glasses to the kitchen, and excused himself with a glance at his watch. "Not that I wouldn't like to stay." Then he asked if he could return later in the week, and Mora said yes. After he had gone, Kala looked through his wallet, which she had stolen as he left. "The ID is fake," she remarked, closing the billfold and stuffing it into the couch cushions where he had been sitting. "But he'll miss his credit cards. Why ever did you say yes?"
"Something like that," Mora replied. "Makes me feel better if I can keep my eye on it."
"Oh," Persephone said. "I think we all know what you're keeping your eye on."
15. Adam remembered how cruel he had thought Gansey would be. There wasn't a day during his first month at Aglenby Academy when he hadn't doubted his decision to come there. The other boys were so alien and daunting, he would never be able to look like one of them. How incredibly naive he'd been to think he would ever possess a room like one of the other Aglenby students did. And Gansey was the worst of them. The other boys attended Aglenby and fit in life around the edge, but Gansey, it was impossible to forget that he had arrived with life intact and instead fit Aglenby into it. He was the boy all eyes turned to when he strode into the gym. He was the student with the easiest smile when called on in Latin. He was forever loitering behind after classes to chat with the teachers like equals. "Mr. Gansey, would you hold up a moment? I found an article I think you'd be interested in." And he was the boy with the most beautifully interesting car and the most savagely handsome of friends, Ronan Lynch. He was the opposite of Adam in every possible way. They didn't speak. Why would they speak? Adam slid into class and kept his head down and listened, trying to learn how to clip his accent. Gansey, a furious sun, glowed from the other side of the universe, his gravitational pull too distant to affect Adam. Although Gansey seemed to be friends with the entire school, it was Ronan who was always with him. And it was this friendship, all wordless glances and wry twists of the mouth, that made Adam think that Gansey must be cruel. Ronan and Gansey were laughing, he thought, at a joke where the rest of the world was the punchline. No, Adam and Gansey didn't speak. They didn't exchange a word until 6 weeks into the year, when Adam bicycled past the Camaro on the way to school. Dark tire tracks pointed its path to the side of the road. Its hood stood open. It wasn't an unusual sight. Adam had seen the Camaro behind a tow truck at least twice already. There was no reason at all to think that Gansey hovering by the engine would want Adam's help. Probably he'd already called a mechanic he had at the ready. But Adam stopped. He remembered how afraid he'd been right then. Of all the agonizing days at Aglenby, that had been the worst moment so far, knocking down his old bike's kickstand next to Richard C. Gansey III's glorious, burning, orange Camaro and waiting for him to turn. His stomach had been a ruin of fear. Gansey had pivoted and in his slow, lovely accent said, "Adam Parrish, right?"
"Yeah, Richard Gansey?"
"Just Gansey." Already Adam had spotted what had stopped the Camaro in its tracks. With daring, he'd asked, "Do you want me to fix it? I know a little about cars."
"No,"
Gansey had replied curtly. Adam remembered how his ears had burned, how he'd wished he'd never stopped, how he hated Aglenby. He was nothing, he knew, and of course Gansey, of all of them, could see it on him. The worthlessness of him, his second-hand uniform, his shitty bike, his stupid accent. He didn't know what had possessed him to stop. Then Gansey, his eyes full of the real Gansey, had said, I'd like you to show me how to fix it myself, if you could. There's no point having this car if I can't speak its language. Speaking of languages, you school me at Latin every day. You're as good as Ronan. It shouldn't have happened at all, but their friendship had been cemented in only the time it took to get to school that morning. Adam demonstrating how to fasten the Camaro's ground wire more securely. Gansey lifting Adam's bike halfway into the trunk so they could ride to school together. Adam confessing he worked at a mechanic's to put himself through Aglenby, and Gansey turning to the passenger seat and asking, "What do you know about Welsh kings?" Sometimes Adam wondered what would have happened if he hadn't stopped that day. What would be happening to him right now? He probably wouldn't still be at Aglenby. Surely he wouldn't be in the Camaro headed to a magical forest. Gansey was giddy now that they'd decided to go back to Cave's Water. He hated nothing more than standing still. He ordered Ronan to put on some terrible music. Ronan was always too happy to oblige in this department, and then he abused the Camaro at every stoplight on the way out of town. "Put your back into it," Gansey shouted breathlessly. He was talking to himself, of course, or to the gearbox. "Don't let it smell fear on you." Blue wailed each time the engine revved up, but not unhappily. Noah played the drums on the back of Ronan's headrest. Adam, for his part, was not wild, but he did his best not to appear unwild so as not to ruin it for the others. They had not been back to Cave's Water since Adam had made his sacrifice. Ronan rolled down his window, letting in a gust of hot air and the scent of asphalt and mown grass. Gansey followed suit. Already, Adam's lower back was sweaty against the vinyl seat, but his hands felt chilly. Would Cave's Water claim him once he returned to it? What have I done? Gansey, dangling his arm outside, patted the side of the car as if it were a horse. "That'll do, pig, that'll do." Adam felt like he was watching it all from outside. He felt like he was about to catch another image, like a flick of the tarot cards he'd looked at earlier. Was that someone standing by the side of the road? "I can't trust my eyes." Gansey leaned back, head thrown to the side, drunken and silly with happiness. "I love this car," he said, loud to be heard over the engine. "I should buy four more of them. I'll just open the door of one to fall into the other. One can be a living room. One can be my kitchen. I'll sleep in one. And the fourth, butler's pantry?" Blue shouted. "Don't be so selfish. Guest room." The Camaro charged down the gravel road that would take them to the forest, a cloud of dust parachuting behind it. As they climbed, the field stretched out, green and endless. Once they reached the crest, they'd be able to see the tree line where Cave's Water began. Adam's stomach squeezed with sudden nerves, as ferocious as that day when he'd first stopped his bike by Gansey's car. He almost said something. He didn't know what he would have said. Was that another image? A blank screen. They crested the hill. The field went on and on. Scrubby grass gave way to a wash where a stream must have been, and then continued on through more acres of grass, hundreds of acres of field. There were no trees. The car fell quiet. Gansey drove a few feet farther before stepping on the parking brake. Every head in the car was turned toward that endless field and the old stream. It was not that there had been trees and now they were gone. There were no stumps or tire tracks. It was as if there had never been trees. Gansey held out his hand, and immediately Ronan opened the glove box and got the journal. Slowly Gansey paged through to where he had neatly written the coordinates for Cave's Water. Blue's breath caught audibly. This was all ridiculous. It was like checking the coordinates for Monmouth Manufacturing. They all knew where it was. "Jane," Gansey said, handing his phone back to her, "please check the GPS. He read the numbers from the page. Then he read them again. Blue, thumbing through the map on the phone, read them back from the screen. They were the same. They were the coordinates that had brought them here every other time. The coordinates that had brought their Latin professor and Neve here. They hadn't made a wrong turn. They hadn't overshot the road or parked in the wrong place. This was where they'd found Cave's Water. This was where it had all begun. Noah finally said it. It's gone.
16. And the Camaro broke down. Its sense of timing was impeccable. In ordinary circumstances, the car would have been full of sound, radio blaring, conversation firing. There would have been no audience for the first subtle sounds of fluid filling the Camaro's lungs. But now, quieted by the impossible, they all heard the engine seize for a moment, heard the turned-down radio stutter like it had lost its train of thought, heard the air conditioning blower cough politely into its fist. They had enough time to lift their heads and look at one another. Then the engine expired. Suddenly robbed of power steering, Gansey wrestled the coasting car to the shoulder. He hissed between his teeth, the sound identical to the noise of the tires and the grubby gravel. Then there was absolute silence. Instantly, the heat began to press in. The engine ticked like the twitch of a dying man's foot. Adam rested his forehead on his knees and curled his arms behind his head. All at once, Ronan snarled, "This car. This fucking car, man. If this was a Plymouth Voyager, it would have been crushed for war crimes a long time ago." Adam felt that the pig's status perfectly encapsulated how he felt. It was not really dead, just broken. He was held inside the question of what it meant for him if Cape's water was gone. Why can't things just be simple? "Adam?" Gansey asked. Adam lifted his head. "Alternator, maybe. I don't know what that means." Gansey seemed almost relieved that the pig had died. Now he finally had something concrete to do. If he couldn't explore Cave's water, he could at the very least get them from the side of the road. "Say it in a language I understand." "In indiget homo battery," muttered Ronan. "He's right," Adam said. "If we had a new battery to drop in there, we could make it back home until we looked at it." A new battery would cost $100, but Gansey wouldn't even feel the bite. "Tow truck?" "State inspections today," Adam replied. Boyd's was the only tow company in town, and he only retrieved breakdowns when he wasn't working in the garage. "It'll be forever." Ronan leapt out of the car and slammed the door. The thing about Ronan Lynch, Adam had discovered, was that he wouldn't or couldn't express himself with words. So every emotion had to be spelled out in some other way. A fist, a fire, a bottle. Now Cave's water was missing and the pig was hobbled and he needed to go have a silent shouting fit with his body. In the back window, Adam saw Ronan pick up a rock from the side of the road and hurl it into the creeper. "Well, that's helpful," Blue said tersely. She slid from the back into the now empty passenger seat and shouted out, "That's helpful!" Adam didn't quite catch all of Ronan's growled reply, but he heard at least two of the swear words. Blue, unimpressed, reached for Gansey's phone. "Is there a place we can walk to?" She and Gansey ducked their heads together to examine the screen and mutter about map options. The image of her dark hair and his dusty hair touching seared something inside Adam, but it was just one more sting in a sea of jellyfish. Ronan returned, leaning in the passenger window. Blue turned the phone to him. "Maybe we could walk to this place." "The Deering General Store?" Ronan said, voice scathing. "Look at it. That's not a place to get a battery. That's a place to lose your wallet or your virginity." "Do you have a better idea?" she demanded. "Maybe we can hurl some stuff into the underbrush or hit something. That solves everything. Maybe we can be really manly and break things." Though she was turned to Ronan, Adam knew these words were meant for him. He laid his face on the back of the driver's headrest and simmered in shame and indignation. He thought about the way the car had stammered before it died, using up the last of the battery before it couldn't go on. Then he thought about how Noah had disappeared in Dollar City while he was talking to Gansey on the phone, and now Cave's water was gone, using up the last of the charge. But that didn't make sense. He'd activated the ley line. It kept blowing out transformers in town because it was so strong. There shouldn't be a lack of energy. "I'm calling Declan," Gansey said, "and telling him to bring a battery." Ronan told Gansey what he thought of this plan very precisely with a lot of compound words that even Adam hadn't heard before. Gansey nodded, but he also dialed Declan's number. Afterward, he turned to Ronan, who leaned his cheek hard enough against the top of the window to make a dent in his skin.
Sorry. Everyone else I know's out of town. You don't have to talk to him. I'll do it.
Ronan punched the top of the Camaro and turned his back to it.
Gansey rounded on Adam, clutching his own headrest and looking behind him.
Why is it gone? Adam blinked at his sudden nearness.
I don't know.
Releasing the headrest, Gansey turned to Blue.
Why?
Is it science, or is it magic?
Adam made a dismissive sound.
No, Blue said. I know what you mean.
Did it go, or was it taken?
Maybe it's invisible, Gansey suggested.
Adam wasn't sure he believed in true invisibility. He'd tried it, and it never seemed to protect him.
He asked Noah, "Are you still there when we can't see you?"
Noah just blinked at him from the dimness of the back seat, his eyes liquid and far away. He was, Adam noted, nearly disappeared already. He was more the feeling of Noah than actually Noah.
Ronan had been listening because he spun and leaned in the window.
At the store when he disappeared, he didn't just become invisible, he went away. If you're saying Cave's water's like Noah, it's not invisible, it's gone somewhere.
There was a breath's silence.
This was where Gansey, if he were Ronan, would swear. Where if he were Adam, he'd close his eyes. If he were Blue, he'd snap in exasperation.
But Gansey merely rubbed a thumb over his lip and then drew himself up.
He was instantly cool and elegant, all true emotions placed in an undisclosed location. He drew out his journal, jotted a note in the margin, and caged it with terse brackets. When he closed the pages, whatever anxiety he had over Cabeswater was closed in with the rest of his thoughts on Glendower. Sometime later, after Noah had discreetly disappeared, Declan's Volvo glided up as quiet as the pig was loud. Ronan said,
move up,
to Blue until she scooted the passenger seat far enough for him to clamber behind it into the back seat. He hurriedly sprawled back in the seat, throwing one jean-covered leg over the top of Adam's and laying his head in a posture of thoughtless abandon. By the time Declan arrived at the driver's side window, Ronan looked as if he had been asleep for days.
Lucky I was able to get away, Declan said.
He peered into the car, eyes passing over Blue and snagging on Ronan in the back seat. His gaze followed his brother's leg to where it rested on top of Adam's and his expression tightened.
Thanks, Dee, Gansey said easily. With no effort, he pushed open the door, forcing Declan back without seeming to.
He moved the conversation to the region of the front fender. It became a battle of genial smiles and deliberate hand gestures. Blue watched disdainfully from the passenger seat as Adam watched sharply from the back seat. And as he sat there, observing the set of Declan's shoulders and the way his eyes looked, he realized something startling. Declan was afraid. Probably it wasn't apparent to Gansey, who was fairly oblivious, nor to Blue, who didn't know what Declan looked like ordinarily, and Ronan's feelings about his older brother were like blood in the water. He wouldn't be able to see through the bilious clouds. But to Adam, who'd spent a fair amount of his life afraid, not only afraid but trying to hide it, it was obvious. The question was what Declan Lynch had to be afraid of.
"Who gave your brother that shiner, Ronan?" he asked. Without opening his eyes, Ronan replied,
"Same person who fucked his nose over."
"And who was that?"
Ronan laughed just once. "Aha!
Burglars."
The problem with getting the facts about Declan from Ronan was that Ronan always assumed that his brother was lying. Of course, usually he was. Suddenly, the driver's side door was ripped open. The sound and shock of it was so violent that Ronan forgot to look asleep, and Adam and Blue both stared. Declan leaned in.
"I know you want to do the opposite of everything I say," he snapped, "but you need to keep your head down. Do you remember when I told you to keep it down months ago? Have you forgotten?"
Ronan's voice was slow, petulant. His eyes, though, half hidden in the dim, warm light of the Camaro's interior, they were terrible.
"I haven't forgotten."
"Well, it feels like you have," Declan said. "People are watching. And if you slip up, you screw things up for all of us. So don't slip up. And I know you've been on the streets again. When you lose your license, I..."
"Declan!" Gansey's voice cut through, deep and responsible. He placed a hand on Declan's shoulder, gently tugging him back. We're cool here. When this didn't have the desired effect, Gansey added, I know you don't want to make a scene in front of... Both boys looked at Blue. Blue's lips parted with indignation, but Gansey's words worked magic. Declan retreated instantly. A moment later, Gansey returned to the pig. Sorry, Jane, he said. Now his voice sounded weary, nothing like the broad persuasion he'd just exercised on Declan. He lifted the battery into view. Adam, you want to do this thing? He said it like it was an ordinary day, like they'd come back from an ordinary trip, like nothing was wrong. The Lynch brothers had fought, but that was merely evidence that they were both still breathing. The pig had died, but it was always either dying or rising again. But in everything Gansey didn't say, in every feeling he didn't paint on his face, he was shouting, It's gone. 17. The mask was his father's. Even in his dreams, Ronan could not go back to the barns, but here was something from the barns coming to him. In reality, the mask hung on his parents' dining room wall, well out of reach of curious hands, but in his dream, it hung at eye level on the wall of Adam's shabby apartment. It was carved of smooth, dark wood and looked like a cheap tourist souvenir. The eye holes were round and surprised, the mouth parted in an easy smile big enough for lots of teeth. This is cheating, orphan girl said in Latin. She hadn't been there before, but she was now. Her presence reminded Ronan all at once that he was dreaming. This moment, the one when he realized he'd already created everything here with his own mind, that was when he could take something back with him. It was his. He could do whatever he wanted to with it. Cheating, she insisted again. Dreaming a dream thing. She meant the mask, of course. It was surely from his father's mind. It's my dream. Ronan told her. Here, I brought you some chicken. And he had. He handed her a box of fried chicken, which she fell on voraciously. I think I'm a psychopomp, she said, with her mouth full. I don't even know what that means. The ragged girl stuffed an entire chicken wing in her mouth, bones and all. I think it means I'm a raven. That makes you a raven boy. This irritated Ronan for some reason, so he took the rest of the chicken from her and placed it on a piece of furniture that vanished as soon as he turned away. Cabe's water's gone, he told her. Far away isn't the same thing as gone. This was Adam. He stood at Ronan's shoulder. He wore his Aglinby uniform, but his fingers were black with oil. He pressed his greasy hands to the mask. He didn't ask permission, but Ronan didn't stop him. After the briefest of pauses, Adam took the mask from the wall and held it up to his eyes. Shrieking a terrified warning, orphan girl dove behind Ronan. But Adam was already becoming something else. The mask was gone, or it had become Adam's face, or Adam was carved from wood. Every tooth behind the smile was hungry. Adam's elegant jaw was starving. His eyes were desperate. And incensed, a long, fat vein stood out in his neck. Oxidet eum, begged orphan girl clinging to Ronan's leg. It was becoming a nightmare. Ronan could hear the night horrors coming, in love with his blood and his sadness. Their wings flapped in time with his heartbeat. He wasn't in control enough to drive them away. Because Adam was the horror now. The teeth were something else. Adam was something else. He was a creature. Close enough to touch. To think about it was to become immobilized with the horror of watching Adam be consumed from the inside out. Ronan couldn't even tell where the mask was now. There was only Adam, the monster, a toothful king. The girl sobbed out, Ronan, imploro te! Ronan took Adam's arm and said his name, but Adam lunged, tooth upon tooth upon tooth. Even as he went for Ronan, one of his hands still tugged at the now invisible mask trying to free himself. There was none of his face left. Adam seized Ronan's neck, fingers hooked in his skin. Ronan could not kill him, no matter how much orphan girl begged.
It was Adam. The mouth gaped, door to bloody ruin. Neil Lynch had taught Ronan to box, and he'd once told his son, "Clear your mind of whimsy." Ronan cleared his mind of whimsy. He seized the mask. The only way he could find the edge was to snatch Adam's hand where it still doggedly clawed at the slender mask. Bracing himself for the effort, Ronan wrenched. But the mask came away as easily as a petal from a flower. It was only for Adam that it had been a prison. Adam staggered back. In Ronan's hand, the mask was as thin as a sheet of paper, still warm from Adam's gasped breaths. Orphan girl buried her face in his side, her body shaking with sobs. Her tiny voice was muffled.
Tolerere me ahik. Tolerere me ahik.
Take me away from here. Take me away from here. In the background, Ronan's night horrors drew closer, close enough to smell. Adam was making peculiar, dreadful sounds. When Ronan lifted his eyes, he saw that the mask had been all that was left of Adam's face. When he'd pulled it from Adam, he'd revealed muscle and bone, teeth and eyeball. Adam's pulse pumped a globule of blood from every place a muscle met another muscle. Adam slumped against the wall, life leaking from him. Ronan gripped the mask, his limbs awash with adrenaline. "I'll put it back on. Please work." "Ronan!" Ronan curled on his bed, half propped against the wall, his headphones still around his neck. His body was frozen as it always was after dreaming, but this time he could feel fire through every nerve. The nightmare still pumped adrenaline through him, even though he couldn't move to use it. His breath came in great, uneven puffs. He couldn't uncurl or answer or stop seeing Adam's ruined face. It was morning, early gray morning, rain beating on the window beside his head. He floated above himself. The boy below him was locked in an unseeable battle, every vein standing on his arms and neck. "Ronan," whispered Noah. He crouched inches away, colorless in this light. He was solid enough for his knees to leave an impression on the bedspread, but not enough to cast any sort of shadow. "You're awake. You're awake." For a long minute, Noah blinked at him while Ronan looked back, wrung out. Gradually, his heart slowed. With an icy touch, Noah worked Ronan's fingers free of the dream's spoils. The mask. Ronan hadn't meant to bring it with him. He'd have to destroy it. Maybe he could burn it. Noah lifted it into the window's diffuse light and shivered. The mask's surface was splattered with red-black drops. Whose DNA, Ronan wondered, would a lab find in that blood? "Yours?" Noah asked, barely audible. Ronan shook his head and sealed his eyes again. Behind his closed eyelids, it was Adam's dreadful face he saw, not Noah's. In the corner of the room, there was a sound. Not the corner where Chainsaw's cage was, and not a sound like a young raven. It was a long, slow scrape on the wood floor. Then a rapid sound like a drinking straw in bicycle spokes. It was a sound Ronan had heard before. He swallowed. He opened his eyes. Noah's eyes were already wide. Noah said, "What were you dreaming about?" 18. Gansey had woken before dawn. It had been a while since he'd had to wake up early for crew team practice, but he still sometimes sat bolt upright at 4:45 a.m. ready to hit the river. Usually he'd spend those sleepless early morning hours quietly going through his books or surfing the internet for new references to Glendower. But after the disappearance of Caveswater, he couldn't bring himself to be productive. Instead, he had retreated outside through the drizzle to the early morning pig. Immediately, he had been comforted. He'd spent so many hours sitting in it like this, doing his homework before going into class, or stranded by the side of the road, or wondering what he would do if he never found Glendower, that it felt like home.
Even when it wasn't running, the car smelled intimately of old vinyl and gasoline. As he sat, a single mosquito found its way into the car and worried at his ear, a high tremolo against the basso continuo of the rain and thunder. Cabe's water's gone. Glendower is there. He must be. And it's gone. The drops pattered and dispersed on the windshield. He thought about the day he'd been stung to death by hornets and lived anyway. Gansey ran over the memory until he no longer felt the thrill of hearing Glendower's name whispered in his ear, and then instead gave himself over to feeling sorry for himself, that he should have so many friends and yet feel so very alone. He felt it fell to him to comfort them, but never the other way around. As it should be, he thought, abruptly angry with himself. You've had it the easiest. What good is all your privilege, you soft, spoiled thing, if you can't stand on your own legs? The door to Monmouth opened. Noah immediately spotted Gansey and made a generalized flapping gesture. It seemed to mean he wanted Gansey and, furthermore, that he was feeling fairly urgent about it. Ducking his head against the rain, Gansey joined Noah. What? More hand flapping. In they went. Inside, the small smells of the building, the rusty fixtures, the wormholed wood, his mint plants, had been overtaken by an unfamiliar odor. Something damp and strangely fertile and unpleasant. Perhaps it was brought out by the rain and the humidity. Perhaps an animal had died in a corner. At Noah's urging, Gansey cautiously stepped into the main room instead of continuing to the second floor apartment. Unlike the second floor, the ground floor was dim, lit only by small windows high up on the walls. Rusty metal columns held the ceiling aloft, spaced wide to leave room for whatever the room had been designed for. Something substantial in both height and width. Everything was dust in this forgotten factory. The ground, the walls, the shifting shape of the air. It was unused, spacious, timeless, eerie. Ronan stood in the center of the room with his back to them. This Ronan Lynch was not the one that Gansey had first met. That Ronan, he thought, would have been intrigued but wary of the young man standing in the motes of dust. Ronan's close-shaved head was bowed, but everything else about his posture suggested vigilance, distrust. His wicked tattoo hooked out from behind his black muscle tee. This Ronan Lynch was a dangerous and hollowed-out creature. He was a snare for you to step your foot in. Do not think of this Ronan. Remember the other one. What are you doing down here? Gansey asked, vaguely unnerved. Ronan's posture didn't alter at the sound of Gansey's voice, and Gansey saw now that it was because he was already wound to the utmost. A muscle stood out on his neck. He was an animal poised for flight. Chainsaw rolled in the dust between his feet. She appeared to be in the midst of ecstasy or seizure. When she saw Gansey, she stilled and studied him with one eye and then the other. Outside, thunder rumbled. Rain pattered through the broken panes above the staircase. A whiff of that humid scent came through again. Ronan's voice was flat. Que mad modum, gladius, ne me nem occidet, occidentis telum est. Gansey had a strict policy of avoiding noun declension before breakfast. If you're trying to be wise, you win. Is que mad modum just like? When Ronan turned, his eyes were shuttered and barred. His hands were also coated in blood. Gansey had a pure, logicless moment where his stomach dropped and he thought, I don't know who any of my friends really are. Then reason filtered back in. Jesus Christ, is that yours? Adams. Dream Adams, Noah corrected quickly. Mostly. In the rain, in the dim, the shadows shifted in the corners. It reminded Gansey of the first nights he'd spent here, when the only way he could sleep was to pretend that this vast room didn't exist beneath his bed. He could hear Ronan breathing. Do you remember last year, Ronan asked, when I told you it wouldn't happen again?
It was a foolish question. Gansey never forgot. Nor discovering Ronan in a slick of his own blood, veins ripped to shreds. Hours in the hospital, counseling and promises. No point being coy, Gansey said, when you tried to kill yourself. Ronan shook his head once. It was a nightmare. They tore me apart in my dream, and when I woke up, he gestured with his bloody hands, I brought it with me. I couldn't tell you. My father told me to never tell.
So you let me think you'd tried to kill yourself?
Ronan allowed the weight of his blue-eyed gaze to rest heavily on Gansey, making him understand that he wasn't getting another answer. His father had told him to never tell, and so he had never told.
Gansey felt the entire year reshaping itself in his head. Every night he'd been terrified for Ronan's well-being. All of the times Ronan had said, it's not like that.
At once he was incensed Ronan would have allowed him such continuous fear and relieved that Ronan was not such a foreign creature after all. It was easier for Gansey to wrap his head around a Ronan who made dreams real than a Ronan who wanted to die.
Then why? Why are you down here? Gansey said finally.
Overhead, something banged.
Both Ronan and Chainsaw snapped their chins upward.
Noah?
Gansey asked.
I'm still here, Noah replied from behind him, but not for long.
Through the constant hiss of the rain, Gansey heard a scrape across the floor upstairs and another bang as something fell over. It's not just the blood, Ronan said. His chest moved up and down with his breath. Something else got out, too. The door to Ronan's room was closed. A bookshelf had been emptied, tipped on its side, and pushed in front of it. The books were hastily piled beside the knocked-over telescope. Everything was silent and gray as the rain beaded on the windows. The smell Gansey had noticed downstairs was more prominent up here. Moldy. Sweet.
Kira?
Croaked Chainsaw from Ronan's arm. He made a soft noise back at her before lowering her onto Gansey's desk. She disappeared into the rain-black shadow beneath it. Switching the crowbar to his right hand, Ronan pointed to the box cutter on the desk until Gansey realized he meant for him to take it. He dubiously extended and retracted the blade a few times before glancing at Noah. The latter looked ready to vanish, either from a lack of energy or a lack of courage.
Are you ready?
Ronan asked.
What is it I'm preparing myself for?
Behind the door, something scratched on the floorboard. Like a mallet dragged across a washboard. Something in Gansey's heart thrilled with fear. Ronan said, what's in my head? Gansey didn't think there was a way to steel oneself for that, but he helped Ronan push the bookshelf out of the way.
Gansey,
Ronan said. The doorknob was turning on its own accord. He reached out and held it still.
Watch. Watch your eyes.
What's our plan?
Gansey's attention was on Ronan's grip on the doorknob. His knuckles were white with the effort of keeping it from turning.
Ronan said, kill it.
He flung open the door. The first thing Gansey saw was the disaster. Chainsaw's cage flattened, the perch splintered. The mesh cover of a speaker was bent like a clam near the threshold, a computer keyboard wedged beneath an overturned stool. A tattered shirt and pair of jeans sprawled on the floor, at first glance, a corpse. Then he saw the nightmare. It moved from the rear corner, like it was a shadow, and then it was a thing. Fast, black, bigger than he'd expected, realer than he'd expected. It was as tall as he was, two-legged, clothed in something torn, black, greasy. Gansey couldn't stop staring at the beak.
Gansey!
Ronan snarled, and then he swung the crowbar. The creature hurtled to the floor. It twisted out of Ronan's reach as he swung again. Gansey became aware of a claw. No, claws, dozens of them, massive, shiny, curled to needle points. They snatched at Ronan. Gansey darted in, slashing at a limb. The creature's clothing parted beneath the blade. It leapt up, straight at Ronan, who blocked it with the crowbar. With a mighty flap, The creature launched itself through the air and perched on the door jamb, hands between its legs, clinging like a spider. There was nothing human about it. It hissed at the boys. Red pupiled eyes snapped shut and open. A bird. A dinosaur. A demon. No wonder Ronan never sleeps.
Close the door, snapped Ronan. We don't want to play hide-and-seek in there.
The bedroom seemed too small to shut themselves in with a monster, but Ganji knew Ronan was right. He slammed the door just as the creature flew at him. Hooks and beak, black and twisted. At the same instant, Ronan hurled himself, pushing Ganji to the floor. In a brief, crystal moment, pinned beneath both Ronan and the beaked creature, Ganji saw the thing's claws seize Ronan's arm, and with hyper-awareness saw matching scabs crisscrossed beneath the fresh ones. The beak darted for Ronan's face. Ganji stabbed the box-cutter blade into the waxy black flesh between the claws. The thing made no sound as it reared back. Ronan swung again with the crowbar, and when it glanced off the creature, he aimed a fist instead. The two of them stumbled over the corner of the bed. The nightmare was on top of Ronan. Both of them fought soundlessly. Ronan could die, and Ganji wouldn't know it until after. Sweeping a hand across Ronan's desk, Ganji seized a beer bottle and smashed it against the creature's skull. Instantly, the smell of alcohol filled the room. Ronan cursed from beneath the monster. Ganji snatched one of the thing's limbs. Was it an arm? Was it a wing? Revulsion coursed up his throat and swiped at its body with the box cutter. He felt the blade make contact, bite into greasy flesh. Suddenly, there was a claw around his neck, a claw shoved into the thin skin under his chin, hooked like a fish. He was aware of how tiny the blade of the box cutter was, how insubstantial in comparison to the bristling claws of this thing. He felt a warm trickle into the collar of his shirt, his lungs filled with the fecund smell of rot. Ronan smashed the crowbar into the creature's head, and then he smashed it again, and once more. Both Ganji and the thing crumpled to the ground. The weight of it was an anchor on Ganji's skin. He was caught, impaled, snarled on this grip. The box cutter was taken from Ganji. Ganji, seeing what Ronan meant to do, stretched his arms for that still grasping beak. So it was the creature holding Ganji, holding the creature, and then Ronan cutting its throat. It was neither fast nor bloodless. It was as ragged and slow as cutting wet cardboard. Then it was over, and Ronan unhooked the claw carefully from Ganji's skin. Released, Ganji scrambled back from the creature. He pressed the back of his hand to the wound on his chin. He couldn't tell what was his blood and what was its blood and what was Ronan's blood. Both of them were out of breath. Are you murdered? Ronan asked Ganji. A scratch came down his temple and skipped across his eyebrow to his cheek. Watch your eyes. A soft probe with Ganzi's fingertips revealed that the actual wound under his chin was quite small. The memory of being caught on the claw wouldn't soon leave him, though. He felt perilously undone, like he needed to hold on to something or be washed away. He kept his voice even. I think so. Is it dead? If it's not, Ronan said, it's a worse nightmare than I thought. Now, Ganji did have to sit down very slowly on the edge of the torn-apart bedsheets, because that thing had been impossible. The plane and the puzzle box, both inanimate objects, had been far easier to accept. Even Chainsaw, in all respects an ordinary raven apart from her origin, was easier to take in. Ronan watched Ganji over the body of the creature. It seemed even larger in its death, and his expression was as unguarded as Ganji had ever seen it. He was being made to understand that this, all of it, was a confession. A look into who Ronan really had been the entire time he had known him. What a world of wonders and horrors, and Glendower only one of them. Ganji finally said, Seneca,
That's who said that, right?
While his body had been fighting a nightmare, his subconscious had been battling the Latin Ronan had greeted him with.
Que modmodum gladius neminem occidet. Occidentes telum est.
Ronan's smile was sharp and hooked as one of the creature's claws. A sword is never a killer. It is a tool in the killer's hand. I can't believe Noah didn't stick around to help.
Sure you can. Never trust the dead.
Shaking his head, Gansey pointed at the scabs he had seen on Ronan's arm during the fight.
Your arm? Is that from fighting with it while I was in the pig?
Ronan shook his head slowly. In the other room, Chainsaw was making anxious noises, worried over the fate of him.
Kira?
There was another one, he said. It got away.
19. Jane, how do you feel about doing something slightly illegal and definitely distasteful? Gansey asked.
Ronan's back was already sticky with the heat. The Birdman's corpse was in the BMW's trunk, and undoubtedly a dreadful scientific process was happening to it. Ronan was certain it was a process that was going to only get more odoriferous as the day grew warmer.
It depends on if it involves a helicopter, Blue replied, standing in the doorway of 300 Fox Way. She scratched her calf with her bare foot. She wore a dress Ronan thought looked like a lampshade. Whatever sort of lamp it belonged on, Gansey clearly wished he had one.
Ronan wasn't a fan of lamps, and he had other things on his mind. Nerves tingled in his fingers.
Gansey shrugged. No helicopters, this time.
Is this about Caveswater?
No, Gansey said sadly. She looked past them to the BMW.
Why is there a bungee cord around the trunk?
Although Ronan reckoned the pig deserved it, Gansey had refused to put the corpse in the Camaro.
It's a long story.
Why are you looking at me like that?
I guess I've never seen you in a t-shirt before. Or jeans.
Because Blue had been staring at Gansey in a way that was more conspicuous for the fact that she was trying to be inconspicuous about it. It was equal parts startled and impressed. It was true that Gansey rarely wore jeans and a t-shirt, preferring collared shirts and cargo pants if he wasn't in a tie. And it was true he wore them well. The t-shirt hung on his shoulders in a way that revealed all kinds of pleasant nooks and corners that a button-down usually hid. But Ronan suspected that Blue was most shocked by how it made Gansey look like a boy for once, something like one of them.
It's for the distasteful thing, Gansey said. He plucked at the t-shirt with deprecating fingers.
I'm rather slovenly at the moment, I know.
Blue concurred.
Yes, slovenly. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Ronan, I see that you're dressed slovenly as well.
This was meant to be mocking, as Ronan was in a fairly typical Ronan getup of jeans and black tank.
Shall I get into something more slovenly, too? She asked.
At least put shoes on, Gansey replied somberly, and a hat if you must. It looks like rain.
Tut, tut, Blue said, glancing up to verify, but the sky was hidden by the leafy trees of her neighborhood. Where's Adam?
Picking him up next.
Where's Noah?
Ronan said, same place Caveswater is.
Gansey winced.
Nice, Ronan, Blue said, annoyed.
She left the door hanging open as she retreated into the house calling, Mom, I'm going with the boys to do something.
As they waited, Gansey turned to Ronan.
Let me be very clear. If there was any other place we could bury this thing without fear of it being discovered, we'd be going there instead. I don't think it's a good idea to go to the barns, and I wish you wouldn't come with us in any case. I want it to be on record.
What sort of something?
This was Mora from inside the house.
Great, man, Ronan replied. Even the admonishment was electrifying. Proof that this was indeed happening. I'm glad you got it out.
There was never a chance Ronan wasn't coming with.
Something distasteful, Blue roared back.
She reappeared at the door, her wardrobe essentially unchanged, but for the addition of crochet tights and green rubber boots.
What are we doing, by the way?
Home, Ronan thought. I'm going home.
Well, Gansey said slowly as thunder rumbled once more, the illegal part is that we're going to Ronan's family's property, which he's not allowed to do.
Ronan flashed his teeth at her. And the distasteful part is that we're burying a body.
Ronan had not been to the barns in over a year, even in his dreams. It was as he remembered it from countless summer afternoons, the two stone pillars half hidden in ivy, tangled banks like a wall around the property, the oaks huddled close on either side of the pitted gravel driveway. The gray sky above made everything greens and blacks, forest and shade, growing and mysterious. The effect was to give the entrance to the barns a sort of privacy, a reclusiveness. As they ascended the drive, rain spattered on the BMW's windshield. Thunder rumbled. Ronan navigated the car up over a crest, through the oak trees, around a tight turn, and there, a great sloping expanse, pure green, sheltered by trees on all sides. Once upon a time, cattle had grazed in these front pastures, cattle of every color. That herd, lovely as fairy animals, still populated Ronan's dreams, though in stranger fields. He wondered what had happened to the real cattle. In the back seat, Blue and Adam craned their necks looking at the approaching house. It was homely, unimpressive, a farmhouse that had been added on to every few decades. It was the namesake barns scattered through the saturated hills that were memorable. Most of them chalk-white and tin-roofed, some of them still standing, some of them collapsing. Some were long and skinny livestock barns, others broad hay barns, topped with pointy-hatted cupolas. There were ancient stone outbuildings and new flat-roofed equipment sheds, still rank goat houses and long empty dog kennels. They dotted the fields as if they'd grown from them. Smaller ones clustered like mushrooms, larger ones standing apart. Over them all was the troubled sky, huge and purple with rain. Every color was deeper, truer, better. This was the reality, and last year had been the dream. There was one light on in the farmhouse, the light to the sitting room. It was always on. Am I really here? Ronan wondered. Surely he would wake up soon and find himself again exiled in Monmouth Manufacturing or in the back seat of his car or lying on the floor beside Adam's bed at St. Agnes. In the oppressive light, the barns were so green and beautiful that he felt sick. In the rearview mirror, he caught a glimpse of Adam, his expression dreamy and ill, and then of Blue, her fingertips pressed to the glass as if she wanted to touch the damp grass. The gravel parking area was empty, the home nurse nowhere in evidence. Ronan parked beside a plum tree laden with unpicked fruit. Once, he'd had a dream that he'd bitten into one of the fruits and juice and seeds had exploded from inside. Another, where the fruit bled and creatures came to lap it up before they burrowed under his skin, sweet-scented parasites. When Ronan opened the door, the car was immediately filled with the damp earth, green-walled, mold-stone scent of home. It looks like another country, Blue said. It was another country. It was a country for the young, a country where you died before you got old. Climbing out, their feet sank into the summer-soft turf beside the gravel. Fine rain caught in their hair. The drops murmured on the leaves of the surrounding trees, an ascending hum. The loveliness of the place couldn't even be marred by the knowledge that this was the place Ronan had found his father's body, and this was the car Ronan had found him lying near. Like Monmouth Manufacturing, the barns was transformed utterly by the changing light. The body had been found on a cool, dark morning, and this was a shaggy, gray afternoon, so the memory became only a briefly noted thought, analytical rather than emotional. The only reality was this.
he was home. How badly he wanted to stay. A few minutes later, standing at the open trunk, they all realized neither Gansey nor Ronan had considered the plan deeply enough to procure a shovel. Einstein, Ronan addressed Adam. Barn, suggested Adam, coming awake. Tools? Oh, yeah, this way. Climbing over a black four-board fence, they set off across the fields toward one of the main barns. The atmosphere encouraged silence. Adam took a few hurried steps to walk beside Blue, but neither spoke. On Ronan's shoulder, Chainsaw flapped to keep her balance. She was getting heavy, this dream of his. Beside Ronan, Gansey's head was ducked against the rain, his face pensive. He'd made this walk enough times himself before. How many times had Ronan made this walk? It could have been a year ago, 5 years ago. Ronan was filled with a burst of fury at Declan, enforcer of his father's will. He couldn't have his father back, probably would never have his mother back. But if he was allowed to come back here, it wouldn't be the same, but it would be bearable. Chainsaw saw the strange thing first. She remarked, "Crack." Ronan stopped. "What's that?" he asked. A dozen yards away, a smooth brown object sat in the midst of all the green. It was waist-high in size and mountainous in texture. Dubiously, Blue asked, "Is that a cow?" It was obvious once she had said it. It was certainly a cow, lying down as cattle do in the rain. And it was certainly one of the cattle that had occupied this pasture before Neil Lynch had died. Ronan couldn't quite work out how it was still here. Adam made a face. "Is it dead?" Ronan pointed to the cow's slowly moving side as he walked around it. Now he could see her finely sculpted face and the moisture around the nostrils. Her large black eyes were half-lidded. Both he and Chainsaw leaned in, heads identically cocked. When Ronan waved a hand in front of the cow's eyes, she didn't move. "Non mortem," he muttered, narrowing his eyes. "Somne fratrim." Blue whispered, "What?" Adam translated, "Not death, but his brother, sleep." Gansey, a bit of the gallows in his voice, advised, "Poke its eye." "Gansey," Blue said. Ronan did not poke the cow's eye, but he did brush a finger through her soft, unblinking eyelashes. Gansey held a palm in front of the cow's nostrils. "It is breathing." Huddled close, Blue stroked the cow's nose, leaving dark marks on the wet air. "Poor thing. What do you think's wrong with it?" Ronan wasn't certain there was anything wrong with it. It didn't look ill, aside from its lack of movement. It didn't smell terrible. And Chainsaw didn't seem abnormally distressed, although she did press her body against the side of Ronan's head as a warning to not set her down anywhere near it. "There's a metaphor for the American public in here," Gansey murmured darkly, "but it escapes me at the moment." Blue said, "Let's just go on before Gansey has time to say something that makes me hate him." They left the cow behind and continued on to the largest of the barns. The big sliding door was worm-eaten and rotted near the bottom, and the metal edging was rusted. Ronan put his hand on the uneven surface of the door handle. Out of habit, his palm memorized the feel of it. Not the idea of it, but the real sensation of it. The texture and shape and temperature of the metal. Everything he'd need to bring it back from a dream. "Wait," Adam said, wary. "What's that smell?" The air was colored with a warm, claustrophobic odor, not unpleasant, but undeniably agricultural. It was not the smell of a barn that had been used in the past. It was one of a barn currently in use. Frowning, Ronan slid open the creaking, massive door. It took a moment for their eyes to adjust. "Oh," said Gansey, "here was the rest of the herd." Dozens of cattle were dark silhouettes in the watery light through the door. There was not so much as a twitch over the clatter of the door opening.
There was just the sound of several dozen very large animals breathing, and over all of it, the shushing of the light rain on the metal roof. Sleep mode, Gansey said, at the same time that Blue said, hypnosis. Ronan's heart beat unevenly. There was a raw potential to the sleeping herd, like someone with the correct word could rouse a stampede.
Is this our fault, too? Blue whispered, like the power outages.
Adam looked away. No, Ronan answered, certain that this sleeping herd wasn't because of the ley line. This is something else. Gansey said, not to sound like Noah, but this is giving me the creeps. Let's find a shovel and get out of here. Feet scuffing through sawdust, they wound their way through the motionless animals to a small equipment room made gray by the rain. Ronan found a spade. Adam picked up a snow shovel. Gansey tested a post-hole digger's weight as if checking the balance of a sword. After a moment, Blue said, did you really grow up here, Ronan? In this barn? You know exactly what I mean. He started to answer, but pain welled up, sudden and shocking. The only way he could get the sentiment out was by drowning the words with acid. It came out sounding like he hated the place, like he couldn't wait to get away. Mocking and cruel, he said, yes, this was my castle. Wow, she replied, as if he hadn't been sarcastic. Then she whispered, look. Ronan followed her gaze. Where the corrugated roof imperfectly met the edge of the finished wall, a dusty brown bird was tucked away in a nest. Its chest looked black, bloody, but a closer look revealed that it was a trick of the dim light. Its chest plumage was a peacock's metallic emerald. Like the cattle, its eyes were open, its head unmoving. Ronan's pulse surged again. On his shoulder, Chainsaw crouched low, pressing against his neck, a reaction to his reaction rather than to the other bird. Touch it, Blue whispered. See if it's alive, too. One of you two poverty twins should touch it, Ronan said. I touched the last one. Her eyes blazed. What did you just call me? You heard me. Gansey, she said. He put down his post-hole digger. You told me you wanted to fight your Ronin battles on your own. With a roll of his eyes, Adam dragged over a chair and investigated. It's breathing, too. Same as the cows. Now check for eggs, Ronan said. Screw you. They were all a little uneasy. It was impossible to tell if this slumber was natural or supernatural, and without that knowledge, it didn't seem impossible that it might happen to them, too. Gansey said, are we the only things left awake? This inspired Ronan. Setting Chainsaw down on a table made of cinder blocks, he opened the old feed bin beside it. Even though it was empty, he suspected it would still be occupied. Sure enough, when he stuck his head inside, he discovered a sharp, living smell beneath the warm odor of grain. Ronan ordered, light. Flicking to his phone's flashlight function, Gansey illuminated the bin's interior. Hurry up, he said. This cooks my phone. Reaching all the way to the crumpled old feed bag in the bottom, Ronan found the mouse nest. He carefully pulled one of the young mice free. It was downy and weightless, so small that the warmth of its body barely registered. Though the mouse was old enough to be completely mobile, it remained calm in his cupped palm. He ran a finger gently along its spine. Why is it so tame? Blue asked. Is it sleeping too? He tipped his hand just enough for her to see its alert, trustful eyes, but not enough for Chainsaw to glimpse it. She'd think it was food. He and Matthew used to find the mouse nests in the feed rooms and in the fields near the troughs. They would sit cross-legged for hours in the grass, letting the mice run back and forth across their hands. The young ones were never afraid. It's awake, he said. Lifting his hand, he pressed the tiny body to his cheek so that he could feel the flutter of its rapid heartbeat against his skin. Blue was staring at him, so he offered it to her. You can feel its heart that way. She looked suspicious. Are you for real? Are you messing with me? How do you figure?
You're a bastard, and this doesn't seem like a typical bastard activity.
He smiled thinly. Don't get used to it.
Grudgingly, she accepted the tiny mouse and held it to her cheek. A surprised smile crept across her mouth. With a tiny, happy sigh, she offered it to Adam. He didn't seem eager, but at her insistence, he pressed the little body against his cheek. His mouth quirked. After a second, he passed the mouse on to Gansey. Gansey was the only one who smiled at it before he lifted it to his face. And it was his smile that buried Ronan. It reminded him of Matthew's easy expression when they'd first discovered the mice, back when they'd been the Lynch family. Astonishingly charming, Gansey reported. He tipped it into Ronan's hands. Ronan held the mouse over the top of the bin. Anyone wants seconds before I put it back? Because it'll be dead in a year. Lifespan's shit for field mice.
Nice, Ronan, said Adam, turning to go. Blue's face had gone to lemons.
That didn't last long. Gansey didn't add anything. His eyes merely lingered on Ronan, mouth rueful. He knew Ronan too well to be offended. Ronan felt he was being analyzed, and maybe he wanted to be. Let's go bury this thing, he said.
Back at the BMW, Gansey was decent enough to not look smug when Blue slapped her hand over her mouth and Adam sucked in his breath at the first sight of the bird man. Ronan and Gansey had stuffed it into a speaker box as best they could, but enough of the corpse poked out of both ends to abuse the imagination. Several hours of deadness had not improved its appearance in any way.
What is it? Adam asked. Ronan touched one of the ragged claws hooked around the edge of the box. It was terrible. Chilling. He was afraid of it in a dull, primeval, permanent way that came from being killed by them again and again in his head. They come when I'm having a nightmare, like it draws them. They hate me. In the dreams, they're called night horrors, or niri, vikles. Adam frowned. Is that Latin?
Perplexed, Ronan considered.
I don't think so.
Blue looked sharply to him, and immediately Ronan remembered when she'd accused him of knowing the other language on the puzzle box. It was possible she was right. Between the four of them, they carried the speaker box coffin to the tree line. As the rain drizzled on, they took turns digging in the storm-damp soil. Ronan glanced up every few seconds to check on Chainsaw. She didn't care for anything large and black, including herself, and so she kept her distance from the corpse even after it was in the hole. But she adored Ronan above all things. So she loitered in the middle distance, poking the ground for invisible insects. By the time they had tamped the last pile of dirt over the hole, they were soaked with rain and sweat. There was something warming, Ronan thought, about all of them burying a body on his behalf. He would have preferred it to stay in his dreams, but if it had to slip out, this was better than the last out-of-control nightmare. With a gentle oath, Gansey jammed the tip of the shovel into the ground and wiped his forehead with the back of his hand. He stuffed a mint leaf into his mouth.
I have blisters. Nino's?
Blue protested wordlessly. Gansey looked to Adam.
I'm fine with anything,
Adam replied, his Henrietta accent snaking out, betraying his fatigue. It wasn't quite his usual tiredness. It was something deeper. It wasn't at all impossible for Ronan to imagine that bargain nesting in Adam's bones. Gansey looked at Ronan. Ronan rubbed a studious thumb beneath one of the leather straps, wiping away the grime and sweat. He wondered when he'd ever be back. Softly, just for Gansey, he asked, "Can I go and see Mom?" 20. Inside the farmhouse, everything was in black and white. The air was stained permanently with the pleasant odor of Ronan's childhood. Hickory smoke and boxwood, grass seed and lemon cleaner.
I remember, Gansey said thoughtfully to Ronan, when you used to smell like this.
Gansey clucked at his bedraggled reflection in the dark-framed mirror hanging in the front hallway.
Chainsaw eyed herself briefly before hiding on the other side of Ronan's neck. Adam did the same, but without the hiding in Ronan's neck bit. Even Blue looked less fanciful than usual, the lighting rendering her lampshade dress and spiky hair as a melancholy Pierrot.
"It feels the same as when you guys lived here," Gansey said finally. "It seems like it should be different."
"Did you come here a lot?" Blue asked. He exchanged a glance with Ronan.
"Often enough."
He didn't say what Ronan was thinking, which was that Gansey was far more of a brother to Ronan than Declan had ever been. Voice faded, Adam asked,
"Could we get some water?"
Ronan led them to the kitchen. It was a farmhouse kitchen, no frills, worn smooth by use. Nothing had ever been repaired or updated until it had stopped working, and so the room was an amalgam of decades and styles. Plain white cabinets decorated with a combination of old glass knobs and brass handles. Counters that were half new butcher block and half dingy laminate. Appliances, a mixture of snowy white and polished stainless steel. With Blue and Adam there, Ronan saw the barns with fresh eyes. This was not the pretentious, beautiful old money of Gansey's family. This house was shabby rich, betraying its wealth not with culture or airs, but because no comfort was wanting. Mismatched antiques and copper pots, real hand-painted art on the walls, and real hand-knotted rugs on the floors. Where Gansey's ancestral home was a no-touch museum of elegant, remote things, the barns was a warren of pool tables and quilts, video game cords and shoddily expensive leather couches. Ronan loved it so much, he nearly couldn't bear it. He wanted to destroy something. Instead, he said, "Remember how I told you that Dad, that my father was like me?" He pointed to the toaster. It was an ordinary stainless steel toaster, room for two slices of toast. Gansey raised an eyebrow. "That is a toaster." "Dream toaster." Adam laughed soundlessly.
"How can you tell?" asked Gansey.
Ronan slid the toaster out from the wall. There was no wall plug, no battery panel. Yet when he pressed down on the lever, the filaments inside began to glow. For how many years had he used this toaster before he'd realized that it was impossible?
"What's it run on, then?" Adam asked.
"Dream energy," Ronan said. Chainsaw hopped untidily from Ronan's shoulder to the counter and had to be smacked away from the appliance. "Cleanest there is." Adam's dusty eyebrows shot up toward his hairline. He replied,
"Politicians wouldn't be pleased. No offense to your mother, Gansey."
"None taken," Gansey said cordially. "Oh, and that," Ronan said, pointing at the calendar on the front of the fridge. Blue paged through it. No one had been here to change over the month, but it didn't matter. Every page was the same. 12 pages of April. Every photo displaying 3 black birds sitting on a fence. There had been a time when Ronan had thought it was merely a gag gift. Now he could readily recognize the artifact of a frustration dream. Blue peered at the birds, her nose nearly touching the image. "Are these vultures or crows?" At the same time that Ronan said, "Crows," Adam said, "Vultures." "What else is here?" Gansey asked. He was using his deeply curious voice and his deeply curious face, the ones he normally reserved for all things Glendower. "Dream things, I mean." "Damned if I know," Ronan replied. "Never made a study." Gansey said, "Then let's make a study." The four of them pushed out from the fridge, pulling open cabinets and shifting through items on the countertop. "Phone doesn't plug into the wall," Adam noted, turning an old-fashioned rotary dial phone upside down to look at it. "But there's still dial tone." In the age of cell phones, Ronan found this discovery profoundly disinteresting. He had just found a pencil that was really a pen. even though an exploratory scratch of a fingernail on the side of lead revealed that it was a leaded pencil, the tip released a perfect line of blue ink when dragged across the notepad beside the pencil can.
"Microwave's not plugged in either," Adam said.
"Here's a spoon with two ends," Gansey added. A high-pitched whine filled the kitchen. Blue had discovered that when the seat was rotated on one of the high stools, it emitted a wail that sounded a little like the wind that shakes the barley, played several times faster than it had ever been meant to be played. She gave it a few spins to see if it made it all the way through the tune. It didn't. The product of another frustration dream.
"God damn it," said Gansey, dropping a knife onto the counter. He shook his hand out. "It's red hot."
Only it wasn't. The blade was ordinary stainless steel, its heat only evident by the faint scent of the counter finish melting beneath it. He tapped the handle a few times to verify that it was the entire knife that was hot, not just the blade, and then used a dish towel to replace it in the knife block. Ronan had stopped searching in earnest and was merely opening and slamming drawers for the pleasure of hearing them crash. He wasn't sure what was worse, leaving or the anticipation of leaving.
"Well, this isn't frustrating at all," Adam remarked, demonstrating a tape measure he'd found. The tape tugged out to 2 feet, 6 inches, and no more. "I would have thrown this out the morning after."
"Perfect for measuring bread boxes," Gansey observed. "Maybe it has nostalgic value."
"How about this?" Blue, out in the hall, touched the petal of a perfect blue lily. It was one of a dozen gathered into a bouquet on the hall table. Ronan had never given much thought to the flowers, but when he did, he'd always assumed they were fake, as the vase they were displayed in had never contained water. The white and blue lilies were oversized and spidery with frothy golden stamen, blossoms like nothing he'd seen elsewhere. He should have known in retrospect. Adam pinched off a bud and turned the moist end of the stem to the other two boys. "They're alive." This was the sort of thing that Gansey couldn't resist, and so Adam and Ronan moved farther down the hall toward the dining room while Gansey lingered over the flowers. When Ronan glanced over his shoulder, Gansey stood with one of the blossoms cupped in his hand. There was something humble and awed in the way he stood, something grateful and wistful in his face as he gazed at the flower. It was a strangely deferential expression. Somehow, this made Ronan even angrier. He turned quickly away before Gansey could catch his eye. In the pale gray dining room, Adam was taking a wooden mask from a hook on the wall. It was carved of a smooth, dark wood and looked like a cheap tourist souvenir. The eye holes were round and surprised, the mouth parted in an easy smile big enough for lots of teeth. Ronan hurled himself through the air. "No!" The mask clattered to the floor. Adam, startled, stared at where Ronan's hand gripped his wrist. Ronan could feel his own heart pounding, and in Adam's wrist, Adam's. At once he released him and fell back. He snatched up the mask instead. He hung it back on the wall, but his pulse didn't calm. He didn't look at Adam. "Don't," he said, but he didn't know what he was telling Adam not to do. It was possible that his father's version of the mask was entirely harmless. It was possible that it only became deadly in Ronan's head. Suddenly he couldn't stand it. Any of it. His father's dreams. His childhood home. His own skin. He punched the wall. His knuckles bit plaster and the plaster bit back. He felt the moment his skin split. He'd left a faint impression of his anger in the wall, but it hadn't cracked. "Oh, come on, Lynch," Adam said. "Are you trying to break your hand?" "What was that?" Gansey called from the other room. Ronan had no idea what it was, but he did it again. And then he kicked one of the dining room chairs. He hurled a tall basket full of recorders and penny whistles against the wall, tore a handful of small frames from their hangers. He'd been angry before, but now he was nothing, just knuckles and sparks of pain. Abruptly, his arm stopped in mid-flight. Gansey's grip was tight on it.
and his expression 2 inches away from Ronan's was unamused. His countenance was at once young and old, more old than young. "Ronan Lench," he said. It was the voice Ronan couldn't not listen to. It was sure in every way that Ronan was not. "Stop this. Right now. Go see your mother, and then we're leaving." Gansey held Ronan's arm a second longer to make sure he hadn't mistaken his meaning, and then he dropped it and turned to Adam. "Were you just going to stand there?" "Yeah," replied Adam. "Decent of you," Gansey said. There was no heat in Adam's reply. "I can't kill his demons." Blue said nothing at all, but she waited at the doorway until Ronan joined her. And then as the other two began to tidy the dining room, she accompanied Ronan into the sitting room. It was not really a sitting room. No one needed a sitting room anymore. Instead, it had become a repository for everything that didn't seem to belong anywhere else. 3 mismatched leather chairs faced one another on the uneven wood floor. That was the sitting part. Tall, thin crockery held umbrellas and dull swords. Rubber boots and pogo sticks lined the walls. Rugs made tight upholstery scrolls in a corner. One of them was marked with a sticky note that said, "Not this one," in Neil's handwriting. A strange iron chandelier, reminiscent of planetary orbits, hung in the center of the room. Neil had probably dreamt it. Certainly, the other 2 chandeliers that hung in the corners, half light fixture, half potted plants, were dream things. Probably everything here was. Only now that Ronan had been away from home could he see how full of dreams it was. And there, in the middle of it, was his beautiful mother. She had a silent audience of catheters and IVs and feeding tubes. All of the things that home nurses always felt she would need. But she required nothing. She was a sedentary queen from an old epic. Golden hair swept away from her pale face. Cheeks flushed, lips red as the devil, eyes gently closed. She looked nothing like her charismatic husband, her troubled sons. Ronan walked directly up to her, close enough to see that she had not changed a bit since the last time he had seen her, months and months ago. Though his breath moved the fine hairs around her temples, she didn't react to her son's presence. Her chest rose and fell. Her eyes stayed closed. "Non mortem, somni fratrim." Not death, but his brother, sleep. Blue whispered, "Just like the other animals." The truth. He'd known it all along, really, if he'd thought about it. Burrowed into him. Blue was right. His home was populated by things and creatures from Neil Lynch's dreams, and his mother was just another one of them. 21. Blue thought it was well past time they took Ronan to her family for a consultation. Dream monsters were one thing, dream mothers were another. The following morning, she biked down to Monmouth Manufacturing and proposed her idea. There was silence, and then, "No," Ronan said. "Excuse me?" she asked. "No," he replied. "I'm not going." Gansey, lying on the floor beside his long aerial printout of the ley line, didn't look up. "Ronan, don't be difficult." "I'm not being difficult. I'm just telling you I'm not going." Blue said, "It's not the dentist." Ronan, leaning against the doorway to his room, replied, "Exactly." Gansey made a note on the printout. "That doesn't make sense." But it did. Blue thought she knew precisely what was going on. Icily, she said, "This is a religion thing, isn't it?" Ronan scoffed. "You don't have to say it like that." "Actually, I do. Is this the part where you tell me my mom and I are going to hell?" "I wouldn't rule it out," he said, "but I don't really have the inside line on that knowledge."
At this, Gansey rolled over onto his back and folded his hands on his chest. He wore a salmon polo shirt, which in Blue's opinion was far more hellish than anything they'd discussed to this point. What's this all about now? Blue couldn't believe he didn't already know what the conflict was. Either he was incredibly oblivious or astonishingly enlightened. Knowing Gansey, it was undoubtedly the former. This is the part where Ronan starts using the word occult, Blue snapped. She'd heard versions of this conversation countless times in her life. It had become too commonplace to needle her anymore, but she hadn't expected it from her inner circle. I'm not using any word, Ronan said. The annoying thing about Ronan was always that he was angry when everyone else was calm and calm when everyone else was angry. Because Blue was ready to bust a vein, his voice was utterly pacific. I'm just telling you, I'm not going. Maybe it's wrong, maybe it's not. My soul's in enough peril as it is. At this, Gansey's face turned to a genuine frown and he looked as if he was about to say something. Then he just shook his head a little. Do you think we're in league with the devil, Ronan? Blue asked. The question would have had a better effect if she'd asked it with sickly sweetness. She could just imagine Calla pulling it off, but she was too irritated to manage it. They're evil soothsayers? He rolled his eyes luxuriously at her. It was like he merely absorbed her anger, saving it all up for when he needed it for himself. My mom first knew she was psychic because she saw the future in a dream, Blue said. A dream, Ronan. It wasn't like she sacrificed a goat in the backyard to see it. She didn't try to see the future. It's not something she became. It's something she is. I could just as easily say that you're evil because you can take things from your dreams. Ronan said, yeah, you could. Gansey's frown deepened. Again, he opened his mouth and closed it. Blue couldn't drop it. She said, so even if it could help you understand you and your dad, you won't go talk to them. He shrugged, as dismissive as Kavinsky. Nope. Why, you close-minded... Jane, Gansey rumbled. Oblivious. He cut his eyes to her, looking as stately as one could look lying on their back in a salmon polo shirt. Ronan. Ronan said, I am being perfectly fucking civil. You're being medieval, Gansey replied. Multiple studies have suggested that clairvoyance lies in the realm of science, not magic. Oh, enlightened. Come on, man, Ronan said. Gansey sat up. Come on, man, yourself. We're all aware here that cave's water bends time. You yourself somehow managed to write on that rock in cave's water before any of us ever got there. Time's not a line. It's a circle, or a figure eight, or a goddamn slinky. If you can believe that, I don't know why you can't believe that someone might be able to glimpse something farther along the slinky. Ronan looked at him. That look, Blue thought. Ronan Lynch would do anything for Gansey. I probably would, too, she thought. It was impossible for her to understand how he managed to pull off such an effect in that polo shirt. Whatever, Ronan said, which meant he'd do it. Gansey looked at Blue. Happy, Jane? Blue said, whatever, which meant she was. Mora and Persephone were working, but Blue managed to corner Calla in the phone-sewing cat room. If she couldn't have all three of them, Calla was the one she wanted anyway. Calla was as traditionally clairvoyant as the other two, but she had an additional strange gift, psychometry. When she touched an object, she could often sense where it had come from, what the owner had been thinking when he or she used it, and where it might end up. As they seemed to be dealing with things that were both people and objects at the same time, Calla's talent seemed apropos. Standing in the doorway with Ronan and Gansey, Blue said, We need your advice. I'm sure you do, replied Calla in not the warmest of ways. She had one of those low, smoky voices that always seemed more appropriate to a black and white movie. Ask your question. Politely, Gansey asked, Are you sure you can think that way?
If you're doubting me, Kala snapped, I don't see why you're here.
In Gansey's defense, Kala was upside down. She hung magnificently from the ceiling of the phone sewing cat room. The only thing preventing her from crashing to the floor was a deep purple swath of silk wrapped around one of her thighs. Gansey averted his eyes. He whispered in Blue's ear, Is this a ritual? There was something a bit magical about it, Blue supposed, although the green, gingham, wallpapered room was full of a multitude of odds and ends to lure the attention, it was difficult to look away from Kala's slowly spinning form. It seemed impossible the length of silk would hold her weight. Currently, she was rotated toward the corner, her back to them. Her tunic hung down, revealing a lot of dark brown skin, a pink bra strap, and four tiny tattooed coyotes running along her spine. Blue, holding the puzzle box in her hand,